meeting for February 5th, 2014 to order. Let the record show that everyone is here except for Alan, who is in Phoenix or in Arizona. Simone.
I think she's just as walking.
She's just walking. Great. Minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any additions or corrections? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, then I would put you the first one up for County Environmental.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And as always, I appreciate everyone's time coming here. And we do have a new face amongst us.
Sure.
And I got the opportunity. I know Stephen's been on the scene a little bit. Last time we did that around the room, would that, think we could do something like that?
Yeah, we'll do that. I'm Don Ebison. I'm the chair. My position on SWAC is the solid waste industry.
And maybe just a little snippet, because you're past president of Washington Refuse and Recycling Association and a long time.
Yeah, I've been an equipment dealer in the solid waste industry for about 35 years, covering this area. Started in Seattle. Actually started in Spokane to Seattle but to here. So most of my life has been spent in the solid waste industry.
I'm Steve Schreier. I'm a retired chemical engineer. I worked in the city of San Jose for, when Steve was there, from 83 till 2000. Probably about 13 or 14 years of that was at the wastewater treatment plant, recycled water, the biosolids program. And I was originally born in Washington, transplanted to California, and now I'm back again. So. Looking to work with the group and take care of some environmental things.
I'm Dick Baker. I'm the county at large rep. I was a chemical engineer too once upon a time, but I switched to civil and worked with the Army in civil and construction most of my career. Then retired for almost 20 years.
My name is Rem Wilson. I'm a principal with Glumac over in Portland. We're a mechanical, electrical, plumbing, engineering firm. We design sustainable buildings. I lived in Vancouver 28 years and just recently started last year with SWAC. So, there's two introductions to
you're up. I just came from Binghamton and it took me an hour and a half.
Oh.
It's terrible. Anyway, my name is Simone Roger, and I'm new. It's my second meeting, and I work for Energy Trust of Oregon. I'm an energy specialist, and I help businesses with their energy efficient lighting needs.
Steve Willis. Also worked in the city of San Jose for a bunch of years and sounds like in the same department, but you know some of the same people. Mostly my career is just enough to be dangerous. I know a little bit about a lot of stuff. So I was mostly a manager and did program stuff and did the administrative stuff for the departments. I retired about 7 years ago and moved up here about 4 years ago. And, part-time in the United States Postal Service delivering mail. This is just another opportunity to volunteer and make a contribution.
My name is Bill Fairley. I'm on the Vancouver City Council.
I've been retired from my primary job, which is a Navy carrier pilot, and that fully qualified me for this position. And I've been retired for 38 years, so I'm in about the third or fourth career. I don't know which one it is. I've learned a lot from being involved in this particular group, and I hope that I can somehow impart some of this knowledge that I've acquired worldwide into making Vancouver a better place to live.
And I'm Pete Dubois. I work in the Solid Waste and Environmental Education Division, and I get to coordinate this wonderful group, which is a state mandated commission, and we are recommending voice to our commissioners on policy around solid waste and hazardous waste programs.
I'm Cynthia Keel. I'm an office assistant with Environmental Services, and I'm here to take minutes.
And we're still working on it. Not tonight.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question of Mr. Duval over here? I'm wondering how the new county organization is it going to affect it at all in the department you work in? Do you know? Is there any changes coming up? Do you foresee anything at all in the way that we operate?
Not this commission.
Okay.
Should we do the guests? We have some esteemed guests in the back row.
Funny is esteemed. I don't know. My name is Derek Ranta. I'm the district manager for the Waste Connections operation in Clark County, including the transfer stations of the hauling company. Previously, I was with the Clark County operation a couple of years ago, moved down to Oregon, and just relocated back up to Clark County effective January 1st. So, taking over for Chris Thomas in that role, who is here for the last few years.
My name is Tanya Gray. I work for the City of Vancouver in the Solid Waste Team.
Rich McConaughey, also with the City of Vancouver.
Scott Campbell, Waste Connections. Been coming to the SWAT meetings for about 20 years. So happy to be here.
Well, as you can see, there's a lot of knowledge and expertise in this room. Thank you. Okay, ready for the updates?
You're ready. You're on.
Okay, I am updating for Clark County Public Health. They were unable to make it. They had a major database update. Melissa Sutton did send me some information. Which includes their submittal on enforcement. They had 25 complaints received in the fourth quarter, and somehow they resolved 28 of them, but that does include previous ones. 17 were unincorporated Clark County, 8 in Vancouver, and those are the big notable pieces. They also have some system updates that they granted an extension for the West Van food waste pilot here in December of 2014. And they've also noted some issues with disposal of our street sweeping material, which is somewhat involved in our solid waste plan, but definitely a solid waste enforcement issue. And I wanted to mention Stephen Schrag has experience. Was it 1 million cubic yards?
950,000.
950,000 cubic yards of biosolids that he has needed to move. We're talking about 40,000 cubic yards of these street sweepings. So I can't even imagine, because those piles are giant. They have been tested with CPAH, which is a carcinogenic. We have chemical engineers in the room. Carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and that's from the asphalt material. So it can only be used for commercial fill. And they are looking for those opportunities to use that material. So that is something they want to report on. And they are working. Recently, they were provided from Columbia Resource Company, which manages the transfer stations in part with Waste Connections. with final comment on their second draft version of their operations plan review for the Washougal Transfer Station. So they've been overseeing the operations plan out at that transfer station. And that's what I've got for public health.
Thank you.
I have a question on that.
Yes.
When you give us a number, you say 28 times in a quarter. Is that what you said, a quarter?
Yes.
Well, is that a big number or a small number? What do they normally run? Is that something to be concerned about, or is that the number to win?
I think that's probably an average number for them. She certainly did not.
Gary used to send those via email to us. Will that... Can we get them from Melissa in the future?
I can have her send those in advance. It came today. And so we can include that with our packet attachment.
Well, you know, you don't have to print them out on paper and you have them on your computer.
Just when we email out the agenda with the electronic?
Yeah, we've got it ahead of time. We can take a look at it. And if you've got any questions.
Yeah, we have questions, then we can bring it in.
Get back and have an answer by the time we get to the meeting.
Okay, and then that leads into County Environmental Services. And I will be talking about other things, but this is just a quick update for some other work that we're doing. I had on my list a couple items, and I'll probably leave it for other jurisdictions. City of Vancouver had talked about a plastic bag program in the news. Bill probably heard about that. And we'll see how that plays out. Maybe when you do your update, you can mention a little bit. And then we do have Waste Connections in the audience when it's appropriate. It might be good. They were in the news recently with an LNI, Labor and Industry finding, so just to update SWAC on what's going down there. And then there's also been some buildup of recycling bales of paper primarily, plastics, due to the slowdown with these West Coast ports. And we've gotten to a pretty large number out there. It's pretty impressive to see those bales build up. We're 8,000 at one point in time. I think we're coming down slowly a little bit. But if we've got questions on those issues, we can pull in our experts who would know much more than that. In terms of environmental services, we've got a book club that started out, and we're starting an event there on February 17th. And I do have a flyer, which we can pass around. We're getting ready for our Green Business Showcase, which will be held at the Artillery Barracks. You'll all be invited as VIPs. That'll be March 19th in the evening. We've got a teacher training for our Washington Green Schools program coming up February 25th. That's in partnership with Waste Connections and the Washington Green Schools. So we appreciate those partners very much. We're getting ready for our Leichner Landfill Open House, which will be on April 23rd. And just a quick note, we'll be coming to SWAC in April to present the two selected options, preferred options, for that master plan process. Just a quick reminder, there's 30 acres, which is referred to as the Koski property, which is flat, uncontaminated, light industrial land that's ready to be developed. County's looking to spin that off. There's another additional 10 acres called the Fleischer property that we've integrated into that effort. There are some contamination issues with that, PCBs. And then there's a landfill at large. So we'll be notifying the surrounding households. They will come and have their opportunity. Might be a good opportunity for some SWAC members to participate. And if we want to get additional information in advance of that April meeting, we can certainly either set up a briefing or a subcommittee and keep that. It's a pretty big moment we've been working to get this land released and in better, higher use for a long time now. So, those are my main updates, and then I'll be talking about some more detailed program specifics for the other agenda items.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rich or Tanya, who's going to do the presentation?
We might each have one thing to do.
Oh, glad you're here.
Okay. So in December, and also in November, actually, both on the 11th day, I don't know if that means anything, but we had wind events on those days. And on December 11th, the wind hit the city pretty hard. We lost some pretty gigantic trees in areas of our region. And so we have some funding in the solid waste program for contingency planning related to disaster debris. It wasn't a disaster officially, but it was for people who had trees come down in their area. And we put together, working with our yard debris contractors, a quick program to provide residents with coupons so they could take in loads of debris that had landed on their property. In addition to that, we provided those coupons to our public works crews that were out and about and could see areas where there were large amounts of debris and hand those out to neighbors if they requested them. So it was a small program. It was a quick and fast windstorm that produced a lot of debris, so we had a short cleanup time, and it seemed to be well received and achieved the goal. It cost about $2,000 for the disposal costs related to those coupons. I just printed a report today for the crew side. So these are the public works folks that are cleaning out parks and medians and rights of way. They collected probably about another 10,000 yards over what they did last December from that windstorm event in December. And that probably resulted in about another 10, I'm sorry, I got those backwards, 2,000 cubic yards, $10,000 more in cost for that. So just a little glimpse into what unexpected debris can do in terms of cleaning up. Then also on a coupon-related note, each spring we provide disposal vouchers for residents in the city to get rid of up to two loads of yard debris because things start growing quicker and they have more waste to get rid of. So that's part of their solid waste services in the city. And we've noticed over time, we send out the coupons through bill inserts, and the number of customers who are actually opting out of a paper bill is growing each year, which is a good thing in terms of the amount of paper we have to send out. It's much more efficient. They get their billing online. So we're having to come up with creative ways to get coupons to them. The government can't do Groupon very well, so we're exploring that. But in the meantime, we just send them out an email and then ask them to respond if they want the coupons, and we mail them to them directly. So there's about close to 9,000 of the 42,000 customers in the city of Vancouver that are opting out of a paper bill. Just as
fast as I can. Can you do the coupon as an attachment they can print?
We have explored that. The unique aspect of the spring coupon is you can only have one sheet because of the cost associated with it. So it needs to be something you can only print once and isn't easy to duplicate, so that folks won't keep printing them and we lose track. So if we could figure out a way that it could be printed, not duplicated, and then they wouldn't be able to print it again, that's what we've been pondering over.
What if you had a website they went to and they could put in their account number as a unique identifier that allows them to print it once?
Those are the kinds of things we're looking at, but then they still printed it and they could copy it. So what we need is a relationship with our disposal sites where they can accept an electronic voucher. They're not so sophisticated as that at this point. They don't have
it. You could print it with a serial number and accept it. They can track the serial numbers. The only reason why serial number works.
Could be. That's okay.
That costs a little recipe for fraud if they do it twice. And then we get a fine.
Serial number is a good way to go, unique number. Another complexity is we don't tell them which yard debris site they have to go to. So we would have to have a massive database of the serial number that all of the yard debris contractors could access.
That, that's true. But there's some infrastructure.
Yeah. And we're hoping to keep working on it. So. Yes.
What do we use the debris? What do you do with the debris? Being new in the area, I'm not sure what. Are you composting or?
Well. A lot of it depends on the market, and some material is composted and used for soil amendments. There are limited options for compost at this time. There's a lot of the material available. We have a couple of mills that use it as hog fuel, so the yard debris is chipped and burned for fuel. So a combination of those.
Thank you. Rich?
One other element of our services we do for neighborhoods in the city, and the city has 65-plus organized neighborhoods, so participation in that is pretty much citywide, and a lot of participation. A program we used to do was a program for appliance pickup, where we would send April and March would be kind of the time when appliance pickups would be scheduled and then performed. And in some years, we had as many as 600 appliances picked up at the street. With a connection, a variety of folks using waste connections and also city crews depending on the side of town and so forth. But we've shifted in the last few years. And now we have a program where if you're a waste connections customer in the city, you call waste connections and say, you know, any week of the year, I'd like to have an appliance picked up. And they say, okay, this is the day you want to set it out, and they'll pick it up. So they get one free one. But then we also have, as part of our rate structure, we have an opportunity to put out other bulky items. So a whole couch or mattress can be put out. Call Waste Connections, they'll give you the date, and they'll pick it up right at the curb. Fairly reasonable rate, you know, compared to get the pickup and haul it down and pay the transactions and all that. So that's another opportunity. And participation in the last year or two has gone, you know, usually a dozen, something like that, for years. It's not been a huge number. And then responding to Pete's question about the article this past weekend, the topic of the article is really on litter and what the cost is of managing that within the city, and others also have that cost, the Department of Ecology and Department of Transportation, a number of volunteer groups are involved. But one question I think came up about bags. There may be some interest in the city council about talking about bags, it sounds like. At this point, we don't have any bag regulation planned. Really, our story for bags is keep plastic bags and other films, as well as videotapes and other things, out of the curbside recycling cart. Plastic bags and other film products, including the wrappers around paper towels and bags you put fruit in it or produce in at the store, all of that can go back to the grocery stores and have a collection bin. So recycle at retail, back to the store with the plastic bags, and keep them out of the cart is really our main focus for plastic.
Except there's the transfer stations too.
Yes, they do have collection bins at the transfer stations for bags, and a lot of businesses are doing recycling of them, and they generate a lot of shrink wrap. Yeah. So they do have systems. They send that back to their distribution warehouse or often bales of cardboard, and then all that plastic material does get reused. They're a good market for it. It attracts lumber. The good markets for the stuff that's clean. And at the transfer station, we want to make sure they get clean material delivered, you know, separated. If it's in the cart, it ends up as trash because it messes up the equipment, and right. It also doesn't come out as a good enough quality of recycling.
It's a good source for cat litter, too, to throw your cat litter.
To use your bag of cat litter. Yeah.
Or people use it
for waste, yeah. That's all I've got.
Thank you.
Anybody from ecology?
Okay. You're on for your recycle events.
Okay. Do we want to hear on the Waste Connections L&I?
Sure.
Right. Yeah, let's do a quick update if we could, Waste Connections, because that was in the paper as well. On the L&I
first?
Okay. Yeah, L&I first, and then Bill, second.
I'll pick it. Unless you really want to take it.
It's around the back.
So I'll say what we can say. We can't say too much about it, of course. Obviously, our priority is always, and our commitment is to the safety of our employees, number one, and the community that we serve. So everything we do is with an eye on that program. So we've had an LNI inspection back in August, and the findings took until January to have a closing conference on it. We were cited 24 times for, and this is at our West Vancouver MRF down here on the Lower River Road. We were cited for lockout tag, improper lockout tag out, and on three different pieces of equipment. And just the way it was written, it was basically six citations on each instance. So that's why I got 24 out rather quickly. There was really only three areas of concern. And then we had an additional citation issued on the atmospheric testing of the bodies of our trucks. We had some of our drivers get into the back of the trucks and clean out behind the blade that compacts the material. And so the findings were that the atmospheric conditions in there should be tested every time prior to entry of the vehicle. There is no company in the country that does that. So we have some disagreements on the process we've appealed it. Where it goes from here, we don't know exactly. But in this process, we've consulted with industry experts throughout the country, safety experts throughout the country, legal team. We've really kind of scoured everything just to make sure that our appeal process is proper and we're following proper protocol. And we feel that we have, and we believe strongly in our commitment to safety on that.
Is that the first violation they've written up, or are there other violations they've written against other firms in the state of Washington?
I don't know for sure. I would imagine over the years that the solid waste industry has had other violations. All I can tell you is this inspector, this is the first facility of this type he's ever viewed. So he had never seen this before. So, and we have a lockout tagout policy on the equipment. And again, we worked with the manufacturer of the equipment to develop that lockout tagout policy and gathered information on whether or not this was the correct way and got all the signatures we need. They just disagree with that policy. So.
I'll say that in the confined workspace issue of entering the back of the garbage compactor, that has been at least 10 years that I'm aware of. It's been an ongoing issue. They talk about hazardous or doing an air sample, and what is failed to understand is the whole front of the truck is open. So this is all open here. You come in a door here, you've got an area that's 8x8 or 8x10, a picture window, but there's nothing there. These type of things have not stood up under appeal any place in the state of Washington, Oregon. And then I'll say something about the lockout tagout of this particular inspector, who I do not know. I sell trucks. I sell garbage trucks. And very much in the know about the safety, federal standards. The man is circumventing federal law, or is asking Waste Connections to circumvent federal law on the lockout tagout. You want to be able to disengage the equipment from running so that when somebody's inside of it, they're not going to get crushed. That's common sense. If you've got battery switches, turn the batteries off, you cannot power the vehicle. The older people that I've trained at Waste Connections over the years, we always taught them, this is the company procedures, and put the keys in your pocket. Nobody's going to get hurt. The man, when I read this report and I was involved, and we need to change these trucks, my attitude was, federal law, I think, takes precedent over. Waste Connections is very proactive in reacting to this. I just want my 2 cents worth in as far as safety goes.
And this lockout tag up specifically related to trucks as opposed to Like recycling equipment? Or?
It's both. The sorting equipment we have at the transfer station, the two balers that we have there, and then the trucks as well. But it's applicable to our 135 trucks, which then is applicable to our couple thousand trucks we have in the state of Washington, as well as all the other thousands of trucks throughout the state of Washington and the industry. So it would be an industry changing event if they were to apply for it.
Now, is there an appeal process? Is that what's going on now? Then who reviews the appeal process? The director of the department?
I'm not sure. I don't, at this point, it's somewhat out of our hands. Our legal team is handling it, so I really don't know at this point.
Confined workspace laws are a major issue in the garbage industry. Everybody looks at that. It's tag out for equipment running. You want to shut the power off to it. Confined spaces, you don't want somebody to get hurt. It's an ongoing education. The solid waste companies that I deal with in Oregon and Washington are very, very, very much aware of the regulations and just blame the safety factor. There was a company in Eugene who had a fellow killed here a couple years ago. Very unfortunate that the man had been running that particular kind of truck in excess of 20 years. He didn't do any of the stuff that he was supposed to do. He left the truck running. He left it in gear. He left the PTO on. He did everything wrong that he could have done. And it was a very, very unfortunate accident. I'll get off my high horse on that.
Look at that. Bales. So also down at West Van, we have the joy of the bale maze right now. We're going to be starting to sell admission to it pretty soon here to generate some revenue because we can't move bales. So the port slowdown on the West Coast, so the longshoremen labor issues, it's been ongoing since I believe last July as our contract ended and they're working about a contract at this point. They've had slowdowns, stops, slowdowns, all sorts of different things. So about November, we began to see a buildup of inventory just from the mere fact that we can't get material to the boats, most of the material from Clark County. We do sell to mills and some of the domestic material, but a good chunk of it goes offshore to China and other markets. That's basically what you're seeing built up at this point, the material that we can't get on a boat to send to another market. Everything that's domestic is being flooded because every other processor, of course, on the West Coast is having the same issue that we have there. Looking for yards to rent to store the material, putting cover over it every day. We've had the county and city staff have been down, the health department's been down to check it out, so we're being very proactive on making sure everybody's aware of what we're doing. But we do currently have about, I think the count today was about 70, a little over 7,000 bales on site in material. And we normally would carry a very minimal amount of material with us. But we process about 300 to 350 bales a day of material. So as we can, we try to redirect some material to other processors, not Clark County material, but we do take some material from other sites. And so we try to push that off the processors to try and limit the load. We saw a pretty good jump in trucking this week. That was kind of nice. And then at the same time, we got an email message saying that the work stoppage may come to a full strike next week. So it's hard to say at this point where things are going.
Bales about a ton.
Correct. And if anybody wants to come down and see you, you're going to.
Okay, well that's a good segue. I brought a video, a very short video, 4-minute video to show, and it talks about a number of the discussions we were just having. One is about keeping the plastic bags out of our blue recycle carts because they get into our processing system and wrapped around the equipment and create a problem. In fact, sometimes we have to actually shut down the system, go in and cut the stuff out. And it also will show you some of the processes at West Van. So let's roll the tape. Pull this around just for the value.
Recycling done right.
Recycling done right. And our next discussion is the...
Pete, where does this show? How is this being distributed and publicity into the community?
That is a good question. We are, and when we talk about our coordinated prevention grant moving forward, we've got about 111,000 of those blue carts in the cities and the county. And so we want to visit 20% of them, approximately 20,000, over the next 5 years, so that we'll visit every bin. And in this first campaign, when we reach the 20,000, we're going to include information on ways they can win prizes if they actually go to a website and watch this video. And I think we've talked about where we can track if they've done that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, doing what we can, incentive-wise, and then outreach. And we will be notifying all customers, probably through a postcard, of the chance to win. So if we have other ideas, please share. Talk a bit more.
Will the county follow the city's lead if they decide to get rid of the plastic bags? Because it works. For all those biosolids was piled up, we had a, just like that you showed on there, and it does. It just jams everything up. And people, God bless them, they don't follow the directions very well. And so if you don't give them the plastic bags to put in the wrong place, then they're not going to end up there. And I'm just wondering, I don't know how fast the city of Vancouver is looking at it or anything. But it really seems like a good plan to Hawaii. I just got back from Hawaii and I was shocked. You couldn't get a plastic bag there now, which was really great. And we already had our little bags and everything. But there were people that complained and said, oh, I got to go buy a 50-cent bag to take to the store. But I didn't see plastic bags down the street and in the ocean or... You know, you just used to see them all over, and you don't see that anymore. So, anyway, I think it's a good idea to take a look at that.
We are definitely trying to educate folks through this program, and it's a fairly new initiative, and it's a large.
So where will they go to view it? You said that there's going to be a prize. Is it online, where they go to the website?
Yes, so we're trying to, again, do regional branding. So Recycling Done Right is kind of our tagline to get people thinking about that. And then Green Neighbors is our landing page. So folks could go in, you know, Google Clark County Green Neighbors. And then from there would be a page.
In the Green Neighbors program, that's going to cover that. I got a thing in my bill today from Waste Connections.
Yes.
The rebate of $100 for a mulching lawnmower?
Yes.
Where does that money come out of?
This is a one-time program that we're not going to continue, so I don't want to get too stuck in the details. We've only had, I think, two requests for that, so we're about $200 into it, and one of them, basically they have to, they do it through the vendor. So whoever's selling those mulching mowers would then turn that form into the person. The person would have to fill out their proof of purchase, turn it back to us. And we have a fairly rigorous procedure from an auditing standpoint. I don't know if that answered your question, but
there hasn't been a lot of.
There has not been a lot, and then it will not be continuing once we close out this piece.
Okay.
We had written it into the grant that will be ending. June 30th.
The answer is taxpayer dollars.
Well, the answer would be taxpayer dollars. And
well, my question was, whether it's the taxpayer dollars or is it part of the tip fees that fund a lot of things?
And again, that's generally it's taxpayer dollars. It's going to be solid waste dollars. 75% would come from the state through the grant, and 25% would come through our budget.
Still taxpayers' dollars.
And yeah, it's all taxpayer dollars. Just whether it's a rate or a fee. But we do have some prizes that we will be offering through this other program, and that's through our contract with Waste Connections. So we have an actual source for those dollars. Okay. Yes.
For the city of Vancouver under electronic bills, you could have a link to this video.
The electronic bills actually go out through Waste Connections, but so Derek, I'm sure took a note on that.
What?
And I will also take a note before I left with Derek.
And again, we are going to be using social media, any way that we can get this information out to folks.
Schools?
We will be working with schools as well. And we'll expect every SWAT member to.
So your messenger is a good one to get it out to the old folks.
Yes.
I read it religiously.
There's good stuff in there. And
some bargains in there, too, once in a while.
And when we do visit the carts, which every cart will be visited over time, the majority of those will be inspected, a light inspection. If we find bags, they will be getting direct feedback of the infraction, but done in a positive way, just to educate them. So.
Here's how to recycle again.
Yeah, and we are scientifically, and when we get into the dollars, which we will be getting to soon, we are doing some characterization studies that we're also required to do through our contracts. So we'll be looking at how many bags are in the recycle stream right now. Then we run our campaign or initiative, and then we'll be testing again, so we can also see what our success measures are. One thing that's a little caveat is we have a number of other jurisdictions that deliver their mixed recyclables to the West Van Materials Recovery Center, and it was a pretty long list. Derek can rattle it off, but it includes Lane County, Eugene, some others as well. So their educational efforts are important as well, because we're a larger system.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you go to the stores and that's sort of the origination point of the bags for the most part.
Yes.
So there's 50,000 bags right there. Is anybody working with the retail sector with that messaging that here's something that you are providing to the customers? Is there any responsibility? Like, you look at the pictures of those clogged, systems, and wouldn't it be great to have a picture right there where those bags are, in the messaging that says, please, dispose of properly,
That is very much on our to-do list, and I think right now we just want to run this first effort to get to the 20,000 carts. We've been in discussion with the grocery stores, but we certainly want to have that same messaging available so folks know where they can take the stuff properly. And those are great partners if we can get them on board. Safeway is Albertsons, Winco's, Fred Meyer's. So, yes, the staff time allows. That's going to be a big one. Okay, so agenda item number 3 is the 2015 Recycle Day events, and we have lined up 9 events. I apologize for the print quality of this flyer. It came off our website. We haven't finalized our poster version, but you can see our first event will be in Yakult on April 11th. And this is in our packets. It's kind of the black, darker copied. And from there, we move to Camas on the 18th, Ridgefield on the 25th, Le Centre on the 2nd of May, and Washougal May 16th, and then Hazeldale on May 30th. These events collect our hazardous waste, paints, and chemicals, and toxics. They also have been expanded to include other materials, which would be tires, electronics, Freon appliances, foam, and some locations will offer shredding. The changes that we've made, we will no longer be accepting at the site yard debris, But we are exploring the option, and we'll need to work with the city because I know you have an expanded coupon program, but a coupon program where folks could bring yard debris to another site for processing. That's the significant change. The only other change in the program from last year is Washougal is scheduled to be held at the transfer station, and we haven't sketched out exactly how all that's going to flow. Washougal in the past has held their event at their operations center, and they've worked with Waste Connections to have trucks on hand to haul garbage. And then we would set up our whole mobile collection event, which is a significant amount of money. And they collect hazardous waste at the transfer station on that third Saturday of every month. So we wanted to get folks in that area in the habit of going to where they can go monthly. And then we'll work with Washougal to have a coupon program for the garbage, which would make it a lot easier on that end as well. So we can eliminate the operations center, have a one-stop shop, have the coupons be very controlled. They don't have utility billing, so basically you've got to know about the program, which I think is similar to some of the wind components. So folks call in, know about it, you know, some light advertising, and then folks can clean up the neighborhood. And then we'll move in the fall to the final three, two in Vancouver, and then Battleground. So these are pretty big events that we do. Last year we did some advertising around these events, and what we found is we really want to advertise the opportunities to bring this material to the fixed facilities, and even better, to not generate this material in the first place. So we'll be looking at those kinds of messaging with our regional partners, and as we develop those marketing and outreach education, we'll be bringing those forward.
Would you remind us at the appropriate meetings, April and May, it's at this place?
Yes, yes.
And this sample was also, it came out of a building cert recently. I don't know if you all got that in the last, in the Waste Connections.
The flip side. Show and tell. Okay, well, that brings us into really the bulk of this presentation, and I will try to keep this light. It is a lot of numbers. Everyone was sent out this spreadsheet in the packet and also via email. And then we also have in the packet 8.5.11 that looks like this. And this will be what we'll focus most of our attention on, but this is the history. So let's start here. And our grant, if you look on the right side in the salmon color, there's a column called available, and that nets out to zero in 2010 and 2011, and then 2012, 2013. That just means we spent all of our grant money. So that's a good number. And if you go over to the bottom, where it's 2013 through 2014, that far bottom right number of $343,052 is what we have left on our current grant, which runs through June 30th of 2015. And we have two quarters to expense that out, and we will. So that number will go down to zero, but that's where we are right now. In the blue category up above for 2010-2011, this is at a pretty broad level, but it shows that our focus at that point was on Save Organic Scraps. That is collecting the leftover food waste at schools. We've got about 100 schools set up to collect that material and compost it. And at that point in time, we had some significant costs because we were using biodegradable garbage liners, and we've moved away from that process. So we've actually brought these costs significantly down. We had money in there for school-based education, recycling, and then computer reuse, education, and marketing for our solid waste history buffs. Dick, you might remember this one, CREAM. And that was before the e-waste bill. So again, Jim Mansfield, City of Vancouver, very forward-thinking on getting this material collected out of our community in advance to the state. So really a leader in that effort. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, excuse me, in 2015. MRW, that's moderate risk waste. That's a hazardous waste. that is for disposal from our fixed facilities and our mobile sites. And that's changed a little bit too. At any point, jump in with questions, and we can certainly get more detail at these levels if we need. Moving into the green colors, those are for 2012 through 2013. It's a full year 2012 and half a year of 2013. They went from a calendar year grant to a fiscal year, and that gets confusing too when we try to talk about quarters. We had the waste stream analysis and plan update. Our contract requires us to go out and look at the garbage and find out how much is paper, how much is food. And then also, that's when we started doing our solid waste management plan. So we've been chipping away at that one. Again, the household hazardous waste collection program. Those are the paints that we collect. And then all these hazardous materials at our mobile collection events and fixed facilities. We started funding the Master Composter Recycler and Master Gardener programs. And we'll talk more in detail as we move forward on those. Greening the schools. This was working with the Washington Green Schools, which is a statewide effort on education and action. And then our Green Business Program kicked off. We did an assessment of a green building and expended just a small amount in that fee. Found out we couldn't actually accomplish that. Okay, moving into the brown, 2013 and 2014. This is our current grant. We are 6 out of 8 quarters through it. We had some money in there for the solid and hazardous waste management plan update. That was to work on the economics chapter, which is chapter 18, and that's one of the new efforts that some of the current SWAC members were involved with. And hazardous waste reduction, again, you can see the totals there. That's a big number. It's not cheap to get rid of this stuff. Our green business program, our green schools, greening the neighborhoods, which had a number of tasks underneath that. And then our organics program, which includes the master composter program and also a study that we're doing right now to look at processing capacity in the county. And we're negotiating that contract as we speak. So, this is where we are currently, and it might be good to start some of our discussion there. Where we want to go, and we have 2 months to accomplish this, ideally quicker, because we need to have our application into Ecology by March 31st. So we've got a little less than 2 months. It's $1.2 million, basically $1.3 million over 2 years. And this is the detail that I wanted to start us off with. And before we get there, I wanted to pull it up on here and just show you a couple quick things. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know this is a lot of information, and
so in the
blue section, you've got 2010, 2011. Are those actual expenditures?
So the actual expenditures would be in the salmon color.
Off to the right. So when it says budget, that's the budgeted amount, or that's an expenditure?
That is the budgeted amount, and then what we do is we actually bill more than the grant allows, but we don't get that money. So in that case, the budget was 1.22, and we billed them for 1.38. And we get 75% of the budgeted.
So my suggestion is, I got a budget background.
Yeah, excellent.
When you have actuals,
yes.
Call them actuals or call them expenditures.
Excellent.
From this, I can't tell that's what it is.
Yep.
And then if you've got a budget amount, that's great.
Okay.
And then if you're, and when you say covered, what does covered mean?
We get 75% of our expenses from the Department of Ecology.
That's 75% of $490,000, is that what you're saying?
Let's look at the bottom one to the right of the brown section, because this is the one I'm more familiar with. 1.281 is the amount of the grant that the county, that's how much money we would get.
From the state.
From the state, correct. The budget, which is 1.709, is that amount plus the 25%.
That comes from...
It's our match.
Here,
exactly.
From our treaty.
Our match. And then...
So I call the covered amount, I call that a grant amount.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be, to me, clear.
Yes, clear is better. And I'm making notes to have you on the budget subcommittee.
I'm happy to chat with you guys.
Yes, that would be very helpful.
And remaining means unexpended?
Remaining means unexpended, yes.
Okay, call it unexpended.
And then of that unexpended, 75 would be paid by Ecology, the 343 to us, and then the rest is our match from our budget. So we will ultimately be expecting a check for $343,000.
So everything that comes down by grant gets spent to the dollar.
We actually submit, we over-submit, but they only give us what?
Right. The rest comes out of your pocket.
Correct.
Got it. So you make sure you take all the grant money, which is the right thing to do.
That's the first.
Absolutely.
First way we spend this.
Okay.
So 2012, 2013, it's only like half. Looks like it wasn't 75%.
What makes that a little bit unusual is they went from a calendar to a fiscal, so that's just six quarters rather than eight. And there's some complexities to these numbers.
Get the end of the fiscal year then is June 30?
June 30 of 15 ends our grant cycle. So we, deadline, timeline-wise, we apply March 31st, and then those dollars become available July 1 of this year.
And they're payable quarterly, monthly?
We bill quarterly. So we would expend July, August, September in advance, and we'd bill them up by October 30th. So the most important piece from SWAC's standpoint is as we move, and Rich has been very helpful as well, when we try to dive down to the detail on how were these dollars spent and what do we actually get for them and measuring those outcomes, this is more of a larger roll-up, so it's harder to do that. And what we're hoping to do in this next round is link everything directly to our solid waste budget. So we don't need to go into this, but this just shows you how it all lines with our object codes. And then those will go into our actual programs themselves. And I know the estimated cost per unit seem outrageous, but that's how we build the grant, and that's an acceptable form. And it includes all the benefits plus administrative overhead and some other things. And then, again, by object code, which you can see on this side, we've got all of our expenditures, and they all tie back to that detail folder. And so for the latex paint program, and we don't need to get into these details, I just want to show you that it exists. Again, we want to spec out exactly to the dollar how these expenditures are going to be spent, both broken down by staff and by program cost. And then we'll also have an outcome section for each one that we put in that we'll be tracking, that we're required to report back. That's the actual measurable impacts from these grant dollars.
Go back one screen, would you please? You, the detail of your paint, your LP3?
Yes, and I would like to spend some time talking about this one as well.
Okay. Go ahead.
We had some discussions. There currently is about 7,000 boxes of latex paint that we collect at our fixed facilities. They're called Gaylords. I don't know if there's a better term for them. We pay a certain amount of money, $180 a box range, and that's paid to Philip Environmental Services to bring that material to latex paint recyclers. There's one in California, there's one in the Midwest. There's an opportunity where we could process that locally, and this is part of our economic development chapter. Some discussions really that came from SWAC and Jack McClary. And we met, Don and I, and then subsequently we've been meeting with the city to really try to see if we can make this fly. And If you run the numbers, there's actually quite a bit of money, you know, $100,000 plus, to process this paint locally. Waste Connections would save money. We would have the material locally and we could create jobs. And we can also position ourselves for, what's more importantly, just like Cream, before the e-waste, we're looking at paint care, which is a statewide requirement for businesses to take back any leftover paint. We can become potentially a player in the state. So if we could process all of the state's paints, then we would be creating significant amounts of jobs. And obviously we would outgrow our proposal, but the proposal is to run a pilot program at our jail work center. They've got about 5,000 square feet of space, large high ceilings, and we can start to collect that material in crates, bringing it in, and working with either experts from Metro Paint, they do it across the river, or working with the entrepreneur that we've been meeting with. And we envision about $56,000 in expenses to buy the equipment. There's a dispenser that they need, which is, I don't know if you know what that is, Rich, but a big bat.
Oh, disperser, yeah.
Disperser.
Like a big blender right there.
And that's just to get the materials, and then obviously there's going to be some inputs to bring that paint to quality. But we don't need to invest that much money, because rather than paying these disposal costs to Stericycle, those disposal costs could go to this local partnership, which would really be a county jail work center, Columbia Resource Company partnership. So that's the pilot idea concept.
Okay, well, to give you a little bit of background, when we had this discussion, like Pete said, I met with Rich and Pete and vendor that's been most interested in this. Is he still a part of this program, or is this on the county? Is he still part of the partnership? Or are you going to bring an outside vendor in to do this, or are you going to do it on your own?
And Rich, you can help because you've been at some of these discussions as well. I think the intent with this pilot effort is to bring him in as an expert if he's the selected person.
If he's so selected.
And then he would be hired by the Jail Work Center through money they've collected from Columbia Resource Company to process this paint material.
So we as taxpayers are not.
We're not going to be on the.
We're not doing a miniature Portland Metro paint recycling center.
It could become that, but we're not funding that, other than the startup costs that the grant would pay for and that we would own, because it would be housed at the Jail Work Center. So it's all county property.
I think we're looking at more. Metro is a government in-house model. We're looking more at a public-private partnership, and just how that partnership is defined is kind of still being worked out.
That's what I would like to see us, the road I'd like to see us go down is, I think the public-private partnership is a way to go. I hate to see us become another Metro.
Oh, no, we're not. No, the private operates the facility. Okay.
And I think particularly, I think an improvement over what Metro is doing, I think having somebody that knows paint and is a business person is going to do a better job than Metro at selling paint.
Well, I've read the man's proposal, I've read his financials and his business plan, and it's a pretty good start. And if he's not telling us a big story on his experience, I think that resource is going to be a good resource for us.
Oh, I agree. And
I could agree with funding the seed money to get it going.
Right.
But I just, in the back of my head, I keep on thinking another Metro Paint Center on in Clark County.
No, that is not the intent. Yes.
There's a new kid on the block. Where's all this paint coming from?
The paint from the fixed facilities is brought in on the weekends through our hazardous waste collection. And then
who takes it in? I mean, where does it go? Where do you pick it up at?
I can let Scott speak to some of that.
Well, it comes in, the citizens of Clark County bring those materials in to us. And then we categorize it either latex or down and send it out.
So people and contractors, anybody can look? Would it be like from Home Depot? Or?
No, it's not for business.
Oh.
Business would be excluded from that. Businesses would have to go direct to city.
So this is just citizen paint?
Yeah. It's a huge amount of paint. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And the cost is significant. Now, one thing that's interesting to this discussion, and I think pertinent to running this pilot program and having CRC be an active partner, is we're one of the few communities, and possibly the only community in the state, that still recycles latex paint, because when they remove lead, it became non-hazardous. And so folks are solidifying it, just putting it in the trash, which with a gallon of paint costing $30 is a wasted resource. So if we can create jobs, create value from a waste product, I think, and with paint care potentially coming, which is a state product stewardship, is really, it could be a big win and a good thing that really SWAC has spearheaded in a sense through the economic development chapter. Some of the discussions we've had here.
Well, one of the things, too, that I talked to Representative Harris about paint, because he was my paint guy when he was in business. Education can pay a large part in this. He brought up a very simple idea. If you've got a half a gallon of paint left in your painting a bedroom, put another coat of paint on the wall. Use it. Don't leave the can. Put it on the wall. Educate people, and I go, how simple? But how many partially used cans do we have in Scott's facility? Just the education thing, to me, it was a simple step. I'd like to see us continue to pursue it. see if it can make sense. Do you have a timeline for an RFP?
Well, the timeline would be as simple as if we agree to move forward with this, write it into our grant, the ecology officer has seen the proposal and is agreeable to funding this, then we could buy the equipment. We could start stockpiling that paint here in the next couple months because they'll want to have that surplus to work with, and then get the equipment right there in July.
What's going to happen with this paint? I mean, you're going to process it. I mean,
the paint will be processed and then marketed.
Because it's like refined oil.
Yeah. Same thing. Exactly. Yeah.
Can you handle the commercial volume as well as the residential HFM?
I can't remember the number he threw out, gallons.
Yeah, he said from Clark County, we're currently doing about 30,000 to 40,000 gallons per year. And he has worked with this particular vendor with Metro for a couple of years. And they have some paint that they're not reclaiming right now because they don't have the right technology. So he thinks he could kind of increase their current recovery rate from 65% to 90%, 95%, which would be another 100,000 gallons. So now we're almost 150,000 gallons that we would have, and that would be enough for good scale pilot. Of course, if it expanded later, which if the whole state kind of started coming once the system was up and going, or if it expanded it, that would be a huge, huge volume. But it sounds like a marketing of that paint is the key piece to sell it as it, you know, sell it all. And it actually has a good value, I think. And Metro has, I think, a dozen colors or something. They'll do this stuff. From what this technology the guy's talking about would be much wider palette of colors. To go into how you source the material, and some of the exterior paint would be used for exterior paint right now, like at Metro and a lot of the other places. It all goes in the same vat, so you don't get some of the quality that you might want with the exterior paint.
Well, we can certainly come back. This is an important discussion. I want to work through this just quickly and hopefully see if we can get out of here a little bit early, because I appreciate and respect your time, but certainly can go the distance if we need to. So what we've got here is our tasks on the side. This is how ecology looks at things. And then we have the activities. Some of these are just pass-through dollars, which I'll talk about. So these just have one line. Some others, like the latex paint, are a little more in-depth. So I wanted to capture that detail. We did want to make sure that we had staffing resources assigned so that we can actually follow through on this and report and make sure that we're tracking everything. The status column, if it's a new grant application, it would say new. If it's SQ, that's status quo. That means that we funded it in the previous year, and some of these probably all of the years. CPG, that column really is some discussions I've had with the City of Vancouver, and then also some preliminary discussions here with SWAC. That column certainly can change upon your recommendation of the regional partners, but the feeling I'm getting is that most of these are up for discussion to be included in the grant. And so as you go down here, you can see there's some yeses and nos. We do need to link back to the plan, which of course is our guiding document, so we want to be as familiar with that. So I did put the chapters that these relate to. And then the budget, including staff time for these, because we can bill both staff time and the program. We've got, so the latex paint works out to $75,000. And I'm going to just skip here to the bottom line. If you add up all of the numbers that I've got here so far, which is an annual number for 2015, it brings us to about $611,000. If you just said we're going to do all of these programs in 15 and 16, or in the two-year period, which our grant is, that number comes out to 1.22, which is right in line with what our grant figure is. So the reason I wanted to start there, because it's kind of one of those things, if we don't like something, or want to add something in, something's going to have to fall off. Or we're going to need to come up with a new process that makes it more efficient, or somehow find a way to lower the costs. So we have 9 events for HHW. And these are significant costs. It's just the way that it works. We contract with Stericycle, used to be Philip. They come out with their mobile truck. They set up the tarp. They bring all the stuff. They pack it. And it's, you know, $10,000-$15,000 a pop. So you do 9 of those, you can do the math. Adds up quickly. Paint take back. Some of these I can get further detail, and I wanted to make sure that I had enough information to present to you. But as I said, we've got 2 months, so we're going to continue to fine-tune this. But we have stores that we work with, the Miller Paint stores, a number of other ones, that will take in paint from residents, and we manage that. We pay for transportation, and that runs to about $15,000 to run that program. Medication take back. I did have a tab on this. If it's yellow, I still need to fill out. We've got some staff time in this. We've also got costs for containers. And ideally, what would help me is if I can keep this discussion at a high level, and if there are one or two or more SWAC members that I could bring in as a subcommittee, kind of, we could call it the CPG subcommittee, who could actually make sure we're online with our detail, that would help me. Or we can try another approach. But there's the detail for you.
That medication take-back, is that in cooperation with Prevent Coalition and the
Yes. Coalition? So we work with all of those partners very closely. And then we do incur some expenses. Electronics reuse. And I might have some help from Rich on this one. We, similar to the paint initiative, we've included in our economic development chapter ways that we can keep waste-related businesses in business and creating jobs. And with the e-waste, where you can bring all your material for recycling, we have had competition with our currently one processor of electronics that takes it in, refurbishes it, and gets it back out, and through that they do training. So we're looking at a way to, and that was all the way back to the CREAM days. So the organization is a nonprofit called Empower Up, and we're looking at a way to put in grant dollars to support that effort. I don't know if you want to add anything on that.
If you don't mind.
I do not.
So the computer reuse and marketing was a joint partnership between the city, the county, Waste Connections, Salvation Army, and Clark College. As Pete mentioned before, the state electronics recycling program. And the aim was not only to recycle electronics, but to actually divert them from the waste stream because they're still usable. Often, we are upgrading our electronics in just 2 years. They're still usable, but we are on to the latest and greatest thing. And culturally, we're noticing a digital divide. People who are being left behind because the electronics industry changes so quick, they can't afford to keep up with it. They can't pay their bills online. They can't access information online. So that was kind of the goal of that program. And even with the introduction of the state electronics recycling program, it's not addressing the reuse, the value of preserving the natural resources that are already in a computer, getting it back to use rather than disassembling it and getting the gold and platinum and other precious metals out, which is very important too, but reusing it is even higher on the hierarchy. This nonprofit program, Empower Up, is the only one of its kind in the community that works with local programs like Goodwill and WorkSource and Hild College to do job skills training. So not only are we diverting usable electronics from the waste stream, but we're working with nonprofits to help people get employment skills and become contributing employees in our community. They currently employ 8 folks at Empower Up, but as more and more players are entering the electronics arena to recycle, it's harder and harder to get good high-value material to refurbish and get back out to this program. So the question is, given our goals of creating jobs from the waste stream and also reusing before we recycle, how might we support a program like this that helps us achieve those goals. I'm sorry, that was more than a minute.
No, that's great. And feel free to come back on any of these issues. We'll just continue down. We're doing well on time here.
You know, Pete, and yes. Just a quick one back on the medication. Take back.
Yes, yes.
Is that for the sheriff's overtime?
We have some staff time in here, and I need to.
Okay, we can do that separate. I just have the question.
It does not have the sheriff's overtime because they wouldn't be coming. This is a strictly solid waste budget.
Okay.
So they would have their own budget, which I'm sure there would be an item on that.
Yeah. Would there be anybody else other than the sheriff on that medication take-back?
So the medication take-back, again, on our detail would be solid waste staff time and then equipment and supplies to run that. I think it could be done more efficiently. These are the numbers I just got. So I wanted to put some in just to show you how we want to drill down those details. And I think by asking these questions and doing hard budgeting, we'll get the most efficient and effective use of our dollar.
So some of the landscape on medication take-back has changed. So the DEA lightened up a little bit on allowing pharmacies potentially to sign up and take material back. So I think some of this will be kind of focused on helping them get a system that makes it a little more convenient for folks to go right to the pharmacy where they purchase the necessary pickup. Something has to be done.
As it is now, it has to be the sheriff or a police officer. It has to be the sort of
right, but it has changed so that like Fred Meyer's can, and they were looking at how they would do it, and they can take non-prescription over-the-counter drugs back now and not get any trouble. So there are some Fred Meyers that will accept it. I don't think they are.
I think because of the accountability problem.
Yes, it is.
Like a chain of evidence.
And that's why I was wondering, is there anything other than the sheriff?
Yeah.
Because driving out to the fairground is a long ways to go. Or wherever.
We try to have a little closer. Yeah.
And there are, there's a control and uncontrol issue. Okay. There's a separate line item for the recycled day events that covers the cost of the appliances, the tires, the foam, the e-waste, and scrap metal, some shredding. And then we also have quite a bit of staff time just in terms of coordinating all of these events. And so, again, this is not fully detailed out expenditure-wise. So if we get there, I will provide that detail. But this is about what we've spent previous years. Okay, the clean cart, just to show you, we do have a lot of detail on this one. A significant expenditure is this characterization study. And we also have some costs on mailing postcards out to the 100,000 folks. There are some costs to bring on some temporary staff who would actually be going out and visiting these 20,000 carts. It is a pretty big educational outreach initiative that we're taking on. And so it is a pretty big ticket item in this round. And it is new at the level that we're approaching this. We have done some work around trying to keep the contamination down, but this is definitely stepping it up. $90,000, this is a direct pass-through. We have a contract with Columbia Springs, and they provide a program, Master Compost Recycle Program. They train, there's a training going on right now. It's at full capacity. I think they have over 30 folks. And they go, is anyone Master Compost in the room? They go through a 40-hour training, and then they have to give those hours back. They have performed very, very well. And so this is an easy grant-eligible expense, and easy for us to get one invoice, put it on our form, and send it in. So I certainly recommend we include this one. Food waste prevention, this is a new one, and we don't have any detail yet on this. There are some programs on in the Portland area. One's called Fork It Over, trying to work with restaurants and other folks that have food that would go in the garbage. This would be actual tonnages that we could utilize and recover. And that is something that we are recommending we consider in this grant. And the final piece here, and this would again be some staffing time, and certainly I wanted to put this in, but we do have an opportunity, and we do have social marketing dollars. We've got both digital and print dollars through our environmental education budget to do some outreach into the community. And this would be to actually get us a formalized plan for marketing, advertising, social media, following our Chapter 5 recommendations that SWAC spent quite a bit of time on, and really getting us to the next level. We haven't been able to get that plan and then execute it. And so this would be using some grant dollars, one, to elevate this need, and then also we do have some on-call facilitation, public involvement consultants that we can help run those meetings, make sure that we're efficient and effective. So when you add all those up, we do come right into that zone where we're in pretty good shape. I think my next step would be certainly to entertain any discussion here, leading up to our next SWAC meeting, and then I would like to have the draft application for your review in March.
Could we get that well in advance of the meeting?
A week in advance. Is that okay?
Well, I mean, the more time we've got to look at it, the better off we're going to be. I mean, yeah, you got any questions? I mean, I understand you got time.
I got to write it, but I can get it done. And so I would say, you know, if we can move forward loosely here, there's certainly time to move around. There's certainly, you know, I want all the input we can get. These are, as Bill's alluded to, these are valuable dollars, and we want to, one, be very accountable for how we utilize and use those, but also be able to show what we'll get for that money.
Now, the items that are down below.
Yeah, these...
Is there any local funding other than grant funding for some of those? For instance, you know, the Washington School Green Program. There's nothing or no grant is what you're saying.
That's a two-year number. I apologize. If it doesn't get grant funded, then it would come out of our general fund. Not the county's general fund, but our solid waste fund.
So some of these items here would come out of the
solid waste fund, yes. So the intent here is you have your CPG numbers. Okay. Plus, I need to fill it. I didn't get a chance to fill these out because really I'm focused on it.
So you are planning on like having the recycled arts fair again this year?
Yep, and I want to have detail, and I'll have numbers there. And I would have done all of this when we built up our 15-16 budget, but I had 2 weeks to prepare the budget because we've had some transitions and improvements. We're building it now, even though we know our numbers.
Now, have they kind of given you a limit, ecology, on what to expect?
They have said that we should expect to get the same amount that we got previously, which was $1.28 million for 2 years. That could change.
So you could add a few thousand on one of these other programs up above?
We could.
Well, I appreciate you getting us this to look at in comparison, because I think that was the thing. We didn't, I don't know about anybody else, but I can't keep track of all this stuff as far as information and remembering what we've spent in the past. That's why we wanted it to look and compare. And
sure.
I appreciate it.
And I appreciate SWAC's interest in asking for that, and also the City of Vancouver's done a great job giving us input on how to move this forward, too.
Then I see that we had ecology.
Yes.
Has responded to our solid waste plan and has given us the updates. Looks pretty normal flow to me.
Where we are, this will be a very brief update. Ecology received our plan, and at this point, they are the last commenter. So we will take their comments, add those in, and formally bring the plans to all the regional city partners and the board, and then our plan is done. And then you will all get copies.
So it's a long process. It's a year process to do. And to the new people, I really, if you're going to be here, we do this every 5 years. And I'd really love to have you here because you're going to understand what's involved and the time involved. And by then, I hope to be, like the rest of you, retired.
I would like to note Cynthia's been a huge help in preparing our grant requests. So
thank you.
Has helped streamline those processes as well.
Good.
And submitting the plan as well. All electronic.
Is there any other business from committee members? Any comments from the audience? This meeting stands adjourned.
We can go through some of the budget.